Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're Baltimore Positive. It is football season around here, and I know that because I have the new Maryland Lottery scratch-offs with the Kiss Face Bird, my favorite logo that there is. If they're wearing that on the Color Rush Throwback City Connect, we'll figure all that out. But I do love that logo, I'm glad that's back. And I love even more that we're giving them out and doing Maryland Crab Cake Tour stops in all of our sponsored locations. Some new places too. We'll be at Costas and Timonium on Thursday. Baseball trade deadline is here, but I'm not here to talk about the 14-0 loss or the big comeback on Wednesday afternoon or even the trade deadline. We're doing lots of baseball here. We've had Tim Kirchen, we've had Buster Olney, we've had Evan Drellick, we had future Hall of Famer Janet Marie Smith on. We've had a lot of baseball here. This is gonna be a football segment. Luke was spending time finally out in Owings Mills. The doors are open. Lamar has spoken. New head coach, rookie head coach Jesse Minter has spoken, and not so sunny that you got a tan, and not so hot that you're going to complain about it at this point. But whistle is blown. I'm assuming it feels a lot different with John Harbaugh gone, right?
It definitely does. I'll reiterate what I said back in the spring for some of the OTAs and minicamp. You kind of forget Jesse Minter's out there because you're so used to if you've covered the Ravens like I've had the opportunity to do, or you've gone out to training camp over the years, John Harbaugh was always kind of camped up, camped right behind the offense, standing there kind of in the middle of the whole line of offensive players. Jesse Minter doesn't do that because Jesse Minter is over on the defensive sideline calling the defense during practice when they're in 11 on 11. So just the optics of that, it's taken some getting used to. And Jesse, by his nature, is a quieter guy. He's not hooting and hollering. And not that John Harbaugh was necessarily even that guy all the time during practice either,
Well, you did
but
see the Giants video this week,
well.
so.
Well, but I'm talking about during practice itself.
No, when he's
And
not being performative, when he's being a ball coach and not acting like a ball
I
coach should
mean,
act, yeah.
you tend to you're taking everything in, but so there's that. But for me, I mean, something that was different than what we saw last year after week two, Nnamdi Madubuike was back on the practice field day one, which certainly is great news. Certainly speaks to where the team is with him, where he is. He's obviously been cleared. Now, he didn't do very much. He went through team stretch and then he was off on the side, on a side field, working on agility work, conditioning. He was dressed out. He was in his helmet and jersey. They're ramping up as a team slowly here over these first few days, but it certainly bodes very well for what their expectations are. I think we all, when we're talking about a neck injury, we don't view this in the same way that we do a knee or an ankle or an Achilles or something like that. You never want to speak in 100% absolutes, I think, when you're talking about a neck. And frankly, it's just the nature of the game anyway, right? We know anyone is one play away from their career being over, let alone more serious concerns than that, as we saw with DeMar Hamlin a few years back in Buffalo. But obviously, the expectations are high. They expect him to play, he expects to play. And if they get a version of Nnamdi Madubuike that is, even if it's just close to what he had been over the last few years, I mean, that just bodes so well. Kyle Hamilton said it, you don't need to be a football expert to figure out that we're a better defense with him out there. And so we can't wait, and we're hoping that everything goes well and he's going to be out there for us. So that was the big story. And, obviously Lamar Jackson talking is always going to generate interest. He didn't have anything to say about his contract when he was asked a few different times. So no surprise there, no change there. But I think just in general, there's just a different energy, as we said, right? We said this all spring. We said this during mandatory mini camp. But now you get into the day-to-day, right? This isn't just you're dropping in for a couple days and then guys are leaving again, right? I mean, now everyone's in it for the duration. These guys are not going to have even as much as a few days off in a row until the very end of August, right? So this is exciting. It's brand new. There's a lot to navigate. It's certainly different. You have a new coaching staff. Obviously, this is a team that still has very high expectations. And Kyle Hamilton being the wise beyond his years thinker and speaker, a spokesman for this football team. You know, he said for all the talk about the coaches, and they're excited about the coaches, they very much are. But he said this game's still about the Jimmys and the Joes more than the X's and O's. And he said, whether we're talking about last year's coaching staff or years before that or this year's coaching staff, ultimately, when we get out there and the ball's kicked off and we're playing, it comes down to us on the field making plays. And, you know, that's going to be a big theme for this season, right? You know, John Harbaugh's no longer here. You know, Todd Monken's no longer here. Zach Orr is no longer here. So, yeah, you can be excited about the coaches and understandably so, but ultimately, the players have to take ownership of their shortcomings in recent years, when, especially in some of those biggest moments that we've discussed ad nauseum, and they've got to rewrite the story, right? They've got to change the narrative about how the Ravens collectively, universally are perceived in those biggest moments, right? So it begins on day one. I don't have any earth-shattering observations from the very first practice. I mean, I thought Lamar looked sharp, but I think Lamar looks sharp in practice most days as I've watched him for 9 seasons now. So, but I just think there's an excitement to, kind of settle in a little bit. I think, I don't think we're going to be hearing very many more John Harbaugh questions at this point in time, right? I mean, I think the spring, anyone who maybe didn't talk in the spring, like Ronnie Stanley talked on Tuesday, for example, he was asked about John Harbaugh since he's the elder statesman among the players on this team. But I think now it starts to settle in, at least for the time being. You know, there'll be another wave of it once they get to, there'll be a blip at the first preseason game, and there'll be a bigger wave once they get to week one and we're in game week and we're talking about Indianapolis and Jesse Minter's first game as head coach. But I think now it starts to feel a little more just like football. And I think when you have the kind of off season on the heels of the kind of season they had last year, I think that's music to everyone's ears to just be able to settle in and just kind of get back to the grind and the process of now getting ready for a new season.
Any other observations other than Harbaugh's not in the middle of the offense? Like, it feels like Pat Ricard missing would look differently. Offensive line trying to figure out the numbers. That's all. Look, man, I did this for a long time before they threw me out. First thing is getting the dance card because there's so many bodies out there,
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I have the roster right here. I mean,
Dude, look at that. Is that 4 point? What is that? That's crazy.
you know what that is? It's Luke last year realizing he needed multifocal contact lenses because he can't read the small print anymore. So, but I think in terms of attendance, I mentioned Madubuike. Calais Campbell was not out there, and I can't say I'm shocked by that. Jesse Minter obviously acknowledged everything Calais went through over the last month. He didn't say this. I think for anyone just being human about this, forget about football, right?
He'll get there when he gets
He's
there.
39 years old. Now, I'm not saying he's away from the team. Like, I'm not suggesting that, but is he in optimal shape to be so concerned to throw him out there on the first day after the last 5 weeks that Calais Campbell has had? I think they're perfectly fine with ramping him up behind the scenes, and he'll be ready week one, right? I mean, I don't think there's any reason to think that. But they have some other guys on PUP right now, guys that we've talked about, Teddy Buchanan and some guys like that that are coming back from injuries last year. But I think for me, Ethan Posick, it's interesting. He's wearing number 77, and they're bringing him along slowly as well. Like, I didn't expect this either because they just signed him a week ago. Like, he wasn't running with the ones on day one, like,
He just
and
kept the
I,
playbook.
yeah, exactly. But he wears number 77. And I don't know if you've looked at like his measurables. He's tall for a center, right? You typically think of centers like Linderbaum, who was more of a, he
Squat.
wasn't just like, he's a little more, like, a little short on the shorter side. Typically, the center of your five O linemen, your center's generally going to be your
Burke was a
shortest
bigger
guy.
guy, now I'm thinking about it from
And
height.
it's funny you just said that because you just took the words out of my mouth. And I was actually speaking to another reporter, veteran reporter who covered Matt Burke, as you and I did. And he said, he took the words right out of my mouth. He's like, he reminds me of Matt Burke a little bit. And even when he was standing with his helmet off, he looked a little, not twins or anything crazy, but he looked a little bit like Matt Burke. But yeah, when you look at Posick, I mean, he's listed 6'6", 320. I mean, you don't see 6'6" centers that often. I mean, Ryan Jensen was a big guy, but keep in mind, remember, he was a tackle in college,
Big
right?
John
So,
stud territory there.
they're going to bring him along slowly. They're going to bring some of these guys coming off injuries along slowly. I mean, Matt Ibike, if you told me right now, if I was kind of, I don't want to predict it because I don't know, and I certainly don't want to make any assumptions about a guy with coming off of a neck injury, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's the second week of August and he's just starting to get into teamwork by then. You know what I mean? Like I would say with Matt Ibike, and I was talking about this with somebody during a Wednesday's practice. I would think probably their goal for him is to have him ready to start taking some reps when they do their joint practices against Minnesota and Washington, which is, going to be the second half of the month. I think you probably do want to expose him to some contact in a controlled environment. I'm not saying he'll play in the preseason. The general gauge that I've kind of, measured used at this point, I'm guessing preseason games are going to look similar to how they've looked in recent years. And if you look at Jesse Minter, his time with Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers, I mean, I think last year was the first time Herbert even took even a couple snaps in a preseason game, right? They tend to be kind of like the John Harbaugh school of
You're
thought.
not expecting Lamar at the and
No,
Derrick
no, no,
Henry at the
no.
very least, yeah.
You know,
Ronnie Stanley, all of that.
in the post J.K. Dobbins ACL world of Ravens football, I think it's going to look very similar to that, right? Unproven starters, guys that are competing for starting jobs, certainly veteran players that are on the bubble and young players. Yeah, they'll play in the preseason. And some of those guys will play a little bit and some of them will play a lot. But you're established veteran starters. And we've said this for a few years now. And I think it's going to be the same way. I think Jesse Minter's cut from the same cloth here, as I think most NFL coaches are trending this way in 2026. It's going to be those joint practices. I think the head coaches, these teams for veteran players, they certainly want to see them take some competitive live reps, but they love the controlled environment of, not having someone fall into your quarterback, knocked into your quarterback, situations like that. Veteran players, in Matt Ibike's case, you don't want there to be some kind of weird turnover or something like that, and some overzealous young offensive lineman, tries to deplete him and hurts his neck again. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, look, I mean, eventually he's going to have to get out there and play, but I think you want to be smart and you want to be smart with your established guys. So I think that's going to look the
Well,
same,
getting your
but
players to the field, I mean, that's how you win the Super
so
Bowl.
important.
If you
I
don't do
mean,
that, you don't win the Super Bowl.
right. And we haven't talked about it to this point, but you know what I'm going to say about the preseason, and you're going to say the same thing. Get to week one with these guys intact, right? You want everyone upright and healthy. Inevitably, yes. At least a few guys are going to get banged up. You hope no one significant, right? But you also know the nature of the game. Even if you do thud, and even if you're not doing to the ground tackling, and even if you are doing pads on for a day or two, and then you were in shells 2 days after that, right? There's still just the reality of you can't put these guys in bubble wrap, but they're going to be smart. And certainly with someone like Matt Ibike, certainly with a Calais Campbell. Certainly anyone coming off of major injury from last year, they're going to be smart with those guys. And, you want to have as many guys available for the opener as possible. And I mean, that's an ongoing thing then during the season, you want to take care of guys as much as we can.
Well,
So,
they're open every day now, so we're now at the point where they're open to risk, right? Like
yeah.
in a way where you're out there, everybody's out there, fans are out there, something's going to happen. We'll send out a WNST text. It'll be brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. But it's football, and welcome to the land of risk, and they're always trying to mitigate that.
Yeah, and even with these early days where you're not in full pads, and like, look, these are league rules at this point in time, right? Like, no one's allowed to be out there hitting on the first day of training camp, right? In full pads, like that's not the reality of where we are right now in the NFL. But even with that, I mean, we talked about it, we mentioned it in passing. The linebacker for the Panthers, the first day of their training camp last week, Shamar Stewart for the Bengals was carted off on the first day. A guy that, I think, that. They had expectations for him. We'll see how serious that is in real time. I haven't heard one way or the other, but things can happen, right? I mean, things can happen. I mean, look at Isaiah Likely last year. He broke his foot on he just rolled his ankle making a catch. Like it wasn't a high contact kind of play. I think it was, what was it, the third day of training camp? I don't think they were even in pads yet. And he did that. And look at how that changed the trajectory of his season. Now, he still ended up getting paid by the Giants, right? And, you know, but when you consider what the expectations were for him last year and how that happens on the third day of camp, whatever it is, I mean, it doesn't always have to be a season-ending injury. Those are the ones that grab the headlines, but you know, you can have something where you're missing all the training camp or you miss the first month of the season and you never really recover from that. So that's every head coach, every coordinator in this league, they're going through training camp. They're saying their prayers when their head hits the pillow, just saying, "Hey, can we get through another day where everyone's okay? You know, we got to get our work in, we got to play."
Not
You
to
know, you,
mention pulled this or, you know,
yeah.
needs a down day or but, you know, dude, it's
It's
still
tough.
July as we tape this and it will be through the week, right? Like they're not playing till the middle of September. Like
Sure. Oh, and that's why.
there's a lot of nothing happening here until something happens and there's a lot of activity, a lot of big bodies and a just some, you know, I mean, trying to mitigate that is the whole job of the league at this point. And
No doubt.
on behalf of all their agents, their families, all of that, but it's just a brutal game.
Yeah, it is, but you've got to get your work in. And especially if you look at the Baltimore Ravens this summer, they've even more so need to get their work in because it's brand new coaching staff, right? So, you know, beyond that, because you asked me things that I'm looking for, like I'm really interested to see what this Declan Doyle offense starts to look like, right? I mean, you're talking about someone who worked with Ben Johnson in Chicago last year, and obviously Ben Johnson had the track record that he had with the Lions. That got him that job. You know, obviously the Bears made their kind of Cinderella-esque kind of run last year that, you know, kind of came out of nowhere and won a playoff game, all that. But so you have that, but he also is a Sean Payton principal or a disciple, right? He's someone that learned a lot, was with
That's the
Sean Payton.
language that Lamar's learning, the
Yeah,
cadence, the calls, right?
but
Yeah.
that said, I mean, those two systems have some pretty distinct differences in them. So what is a Declan Doyle offense going to look like? I'm guessing it's going to be a hybrid of those two. And I think for me, and people that are much more versed in really breaking down offense and really breaking down film, but one thing that was talked about quite a bit last year with Lamar, and really, you know, even go back to 2 years ago, but we think back to the early Lamar Jackson offenses under Greg Roman, obviously, they were in shotgun almost all the time. Right, almost all the time. And we have seen the last couple of years, and this has been a little bit of a league thing trending a little bit back that this way as well, because you know the shotgun and pistol, you know, has become so much more prevalent than it was for years and years and years. But I will be interested to see, because you look at some of the metrics from last year, Lamar did really well with play action under center plays, but they just didn't do it a whole lot. And I'm not saying that to throw shade at Todd Monken. You know, I thought very highly of the job Todd Monken did. But I do wonder if Declan Doyle, being the intellect that he is, and like this, you know, he's an impressive guy. I mean, I'll just, you know, I haven't had a ton of opportunities to talk to him, but the couple that I have, I mean, you can see why they hired him despite being 30 years old. Like you can see, and even the players, you know, the way they talk about him, there's an excitement to it. But I do wonder if we'll see a Ravens offense that, one, they don't have a traditional fullback anymore, right? They're not going to roster a fullback. Yes, Durham Smythe or maybe one of the rookie tight ends, they'll line up as a fullback in certain formations, but they're not going to roster a fullback this year. I mean, I'd be stunned if they do because, frankly, I don't know who it would be on their 90-man roster right now. So there's that element, and I think there's the element of wondering if we'll see a Lamar Jackson playing under center a lot more than he has in the past. Not to say they'll get rid of shotgun. I mean, everyone uses a shotgun in the modern NFL. But I do wonder if that'll just be something that's, you know, some different looks. And I'm curious to see what that looks like, right? I mean, it's just, you know, one day I'm not drawing any conclusions off that. I'm not drawing any conclusions off of, you know, the four OTAs and a couple days of mandatory minicamp. I mean, it's, you know, that's a lot of that's TBD. And they're also probably going to be calculated even in terms of, how much they're showing, even in a practice setting, knowing that fans are out there and media is reporting on it and all that. So, but I'm interested to see what that looks like. I think we all are working under a pretty safe assumption here of what Jesse Minter's defense is going to look like, right? Obviously, he's put his own spin on it from going to Michigan and then being with the Chargers, but we know that he's cut from the same cloth as Mike McDonald. Those two guys were so instrumental in creating this iteration of the Ravens defense that was done like post 2017, right? I mean, those two guys were young guys on the staff that, Wink Martindale challenged and John Harbaugh challenged the, hey, let's reimagine this. Let's make this more complicated for the opposition, but easier for us to teach our own guys. So I don't think their defense is necessarily going to look night and day different in what they did the last couple of years. Probably a little bit of a more of a return to how it looked under McDonald, but you're expecting much better things, right? It's why they hired Jesse Minter. They need their defense to be really, really good. It's just that simple. But I think schematically, not necessarily going to be like stunned and shocked by what they do. But the offense, I mean, that has the potential to be a very, I don't want to say blank canvas, but close to it, because you just don't know who Declan Doyle is going to draw more from. Is it going to be more Sean Payton? Is it going to be more Ben Johnson? Is it going to be a hybrid of those two? Or does he have something else in mind? Because this is truly his first chance to really call plays and really be the guy, right? I just said it. No disrespect to Anthony Weaver. He's their defensive coordinator, but it's Jesse Minter's defense. It's not Anthony Weaver's defense. But this is the first time Declan Doyle, this isn't Ben Johnson's offense that you're, managing and game planning over the course of the week. This is a chance to that it's your own. So,
Well, you also have a you have several Cadillacs in here, right? Not to
yeah,
plug the Cadillac
of
dealership,
course.
but and by the way, Luke Jones is here. We're covering football. You can follow him at Baltimore Luke. All the things we do. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. If you love football, you'll love the Raven Scratch Offs with the Kiss Face Bird, which I love. We'll be at Costas on Thursday, probably talking more baseball and a lot of baseball this week here. If you've listened in, if you're on the podcast, you want to hear Buster Olney's right there. Tim Kirkchian's here. Marty Conway's there. Kurt Badenhausen. Just been a great January Smith. Great baseball week, but we're in a football conversation here. And I don't know that I've said this, and we've talked about Declan Doyle a half dozen times already in long form, just about his background, his age, just on and on and on. How he would prefer to utilize the Cadillacs. And I go back to Greg Roman, which was let's use Lamar Jackson as a pinball machine and subject him to contact. And Lamar wasn't great at it at the beginning, like not seeking contact. He's gotten much better at it, and avoiding contact. It was amazing how rubbery he was the first couple, 3, 4 years in taking contact that we wouldn't want him to take right now. That Declan Doyle does not want him to take. That even the more modern version of having seen this offense perform and perform well in a way that never has in the history of the game. How much you want to run him, how much you want to decoy him, how much you're going to use Derrick Henry, how much you're going to use Derrick Henry. Where is that elbow or that soft spot where the passing game becomes preferred to the running game? And then who are the passing targets for me? And the seeing this without a Pat Ricard, things that they did intellectually to expose Lamar or really protect Lamar, Pat Ricard, the running game. Mark Andrews is a binky in a lifetime ago, like literally, where is Zay Flowers really a binky? He's more of a weapon than a binky. And he's probably going to be more down the field than up the field. How much time is he going to have with these offensive linemen? What does he really think? What does Declan Doyle like when he sees this lineman? There's a veteran guy like DaCosta or a sage person around there, and I don't mean Sage Steele or Chad Steele, but somebody sage around there would look and say, "This is what we're going to be good at. This is what we're going to be bad at because you can design anything you want until they're good at it, really good at it, world class at it." And I mean just holding blocks for this offensive line group, let alone what Ronnie Stanley has in the tank, what Lamar has in the tank, what Derrick Henry has in the tank, where their health is on a weekly basis. When, I mean, dude, all we do in baseball is manage pitch count. They were doing that with Scooble the other day. It, maybe they just let Scooble pitch two more innings, the Tigers win the game. Right, like period, right? But it's we're gonna deal him. It's his elbow. It's 85 pitches. It's Bradish. How many pitches he has this week, this month, this year, dude? Pitch count on all of this with Ronnie Stanley snaps, let alone Lamar as he gets up on whatever Lamar is. He's an older version of it. That's all I'm gonna say because he's taking some heat, taking some body hits that you don't want him taking. Missed parts of seasons. With injuries that are pinky winky, not season ending, rip my knee up. Like he's had injuries that he may have could have played through into, like these have not been whoppers. He hasn't had a whopper. So like the way Brady did, the way Burrow's had three of them or whatever it's been. I just philosophically, if Declan Doyle was the kind of young man that would speak to an old former media guy like me, that's not invited. After all I did was sit and do this for 30 years and talk to people like him about it, about their philosophy. And no, and, you know, and it was to my credit as a reporter that I knew what they were thinking and could call bullshit when they were lying to me. Can't do any of that anymore. But I really wonder what they think they're going to, you know, do they really think they're getting 19 games out of Ronnie Stanley and 72 snaps a game? And like, I guess. I mean, we're not talking about anything else. We're not even talking about who the backup is or pronouncing the name of the new center. So we're early into this, but I always wonder the forecast. I remember doing this with you last year. I think I've done this with you before baseball season. How many innings are we really getting out of Eflin? Yeah, right. How many innings are we really getting out of Kramer? What how
Wasn't
many
many.
what are we really getting out of Rutschman this year? What's the productivity in Lane? Because they talk about that in a much more sophisticated statistical way than I do in regard to how many. But I'll do that. I'll play that game with you later when I figure this out and I see these important preseason games. Because we're still not going to see anything to know anything about their what they really think from their wide receiver 2, 3, 4, which is better be important because Derrick Henry better not be 72% of your offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's look,
I
it's
just lay a lot on you. I didn't even
no.
wrap it, but you know, I mean, these are this is if we're in a bar talking about
I
this,
mean,
which
you
we will
have
be a couple
to
weeks from now, this is what I'm talking about.
look, there's no planning where you can just say, well, okay, it's only going to be this number of snaps or
But
this.
you'd like to have a strategy, ideally, and think this is how we're going to use these pieces, because that's all they've said and done
Sure.
the last 6 months is try to figure this out.
That said, when you're in the context of the game and baseball is different because you pull someone and you don't put them back in the game then, right? I mean,
Right,
like,
right.
there's no free substitution where someone can get a blow for
You
three
know, I'm
plays and
so
then they're,
glad this is the
yeah.
things you're gonna have to teach your nieces when they need to learn sports. Is
But I
that
do think,
why do they take them out and they can't come back in? Because
right.
that screwed me up until I was 10.
Yeah. But conceptually, yes, you're right. You do want to think about these things. I mean, any organization in any sport worth their salt. Buck Showalter used to say this a lot in baseball. Like, you've got to talk about the what ifs, right? I mean, look, Derrick Henry's incredible. It's incredible what he's done through his age 31 season, but he's going to be 33 years old in early January. Can you sit here and say definitively that he's going to have another 300 carry season? Maybe he will, right?
Dude, I
Maybe he
know you'll
will,
give him the ball
but.
33 times in Buffalo if you need
And that's the
to.
thing, like a game week to week, depending on how that game is going, you don't know what's going to happen, right? If you have a blowout, you can pull Lamar at the beginning of the fourth quarter, right? But if you're in a position where you're down three touchdowns and you're trying to come back, he's probably going to throw 50 times that day, right? So you can never truly plan it out, but you've got to think about all the different scenarios. I think for me, I already mentioned the play action and maybe more play action under center. And this really lends itself to the point I was trying to make about Lamar. Now, Derrick Henry, I mean, for me, part of the question is Okay, you can sit here and say you don't want Derrick Henry carrying the ball 25 or 30 times a game in September and October if all things are being equal, and that sounds fine. And if game script and just your ability as a football team lends itself that you don't need to lean that heavily on him, then great. Good, because the question would be, okay, you can say he's not going to get as many carries, but are you going to be able to count on Justice Hill? Are you going to be able to count on Rasheed Ali? Are you going to be able to count on the rookie Adam Randall to be part of that equation? And that's really tough, right? Like I can't. It's I like Justice Hill a lot, but he's coming off of an injury-plagued year, and he's not getting any younger, right? In terms of running back terms, Derrick Henry is the exception to the rule. Running backs that are getting closer and closer to 30, you know, Justice Hill, looking at it right now, he is 28 years old. You know, that's not young for a running back, right? So you can kind of do that. But to go back to Lamar, because I think that's where this is so fascinating for any offensive coordinator, right? Whoever's going to come in, I mean, the reason why Declan Doyle was eager to take this job is because of Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, I don't think it's that, you know, it's not that complex, right? You get a chance to. It's why Jesse Minter had this as his number one job, right? I mean, it would have been this or Buffalo because Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen are world's better quarterbacks than any of the other quarterbacks that had head coach openings, you know, as far as those teams. So, but I think for me, if I'm an offensive coordinator, and again, I don't have any expertise, but I'm just talking about this philosophically. For me, it is not taking away the threat of Lamar Jackson running, because that is such an unbelievable game changer and has been for 9 years, because teams have to play you 11 on 11 football, right? That's something we talked about so much in the Greg Roman era, the idea that, you know, the mesh point, you have to have a defender on the quarterback. You know, when Joe Flacco is playing, you know, you don't have to worry about Joe Flacco keeping the ball. You know what I mean? But with Lamar Jackson, you have to be cognizant of that on every single play. Now, that has to be the reality, because you know Lamar can do that, whether he's going to run 8 times a game, 12 times a game in a stray time where maybe you need him to do it a little more because Derrick Henry tweaked his ankle or something like that. Or if he's running twice a game, but you need that threat to be there on as many plays as possible. Obviously, if it's 3rd and 18, yeah, you're not counting on Lamar to keep the ball on a design run. Like, but we've also seen Lamar scramble on 3rd and 18 and pick up a first down. So the point is, how can you best utilize that element? How can you design an offense to continue to have that element? Well, yes, being cognizant of not wanting Lamar to take too many hits, not wanting Lamar, you know, whether we're even talking about the hits, just the physical toll it takes for him to run the ball X number of times in a close game, right? There was also an element with Lamar, especially early in his career on those games. You know, you think you cited that Vikings game that went into overtime years back where he ran, what, 24 times, whatever it was. But there's also the element of when the quarterback's taken off and running, like he's going to be breathing heavy going back to the huddle for the next play. Like you don't want him blown up on what could be a key third down play, and he's out of breath, right? So there's so much to consider. But again, it's his superpower, right? It's what is going to make Lamar Jackson a Hall of Famer, that rushing ability. Now, it's not just that. He's maybe the greatest dual threat quarterback in NFL history. He's certainly the greatest rushing quarterback in NFL history. I feel that way, period, point blank. But what can you do to maybe alleviate some risk, be a little more cognizant of, yeah, he did have some nagging injuries last year, and you don't want him to have another season like that. But you never want this to just become, well, we're not going to even have Lamar even be a threat, right? And he's just going to drop back in traditional pass sets, and there's not going to be a play fake or anything. Like that would just be dumb. Like, why would you do that with him or with any quarterback with mobility? Like, it'd be dumb if the Bills didn't have Josh Allen do that. It'd be dumb if, you know, go down the list, whatever quarterback that you like to think can move around. So that's where I think I'm just really interested to see what this Declan Doyle offense is going to look like. I mean, I think all of us are assuming the days of Lamar Jackson rushing for 1,000 yards are over. right? I mean, I
I
but that's
guess, right?
I would think, right? I mean, I'd be I
Well,
would
then he
be
better
very
be a hell of a passer then, and they better have a hell of a running game aside from
well,
him.
he's been a hell
And
of a passer for a long time. I mean, I'll
okay,
put, yeah.
he better be that with these receivers and this group and this protection and this running game in this offense right now. And it's all been built, Steve Bisciotti down to maximize, not next year, this year, right?
Sure,
There ain't no Lamar next year yet,
but just
right?
to finish my point, it can't be him at 350 yards like last year either, right? That wasn't enough. Like,
Okay.
unless Adam Randall is the next Pro Bowl running back in Baltimore, and like, and is so, you know, Steve Bisciotti found a future All-Pro running back in the fifth round. You know, I can't imagine that the running backs behind Derrick Henry are going to carry the ball so much that Lamar's not, that you're going to get away with Lamar not being a bigger factor in the run game than he was last
Well,
year.
this is where I ask who's the decoy, you know, and who's carrying a rock. And in a Lamar, Derrick Henry, and you don't care about knocking the tread off of either one of them in any way. In that way, if you're trying to win, you're not trying to bubble wrap them, I guess, although you might want to think about bubble wrapping eight. And I don't think eight will be much if the running back goes down. They're going to have problems around here, too.
Well,
Like, you know what I
if the
mean?
running
First
back
down's
goes
a
down,
problem if the running back goes.
if Henry goes down, that's where you,
Lamar becomes the running
that's
back.
when Lamar becomes the focal point of the running game again, and that you
Boy,
don't
I
want
don't
that.
like that in week 13, let alone in week six.
Let me try to convey what I'm trying to, what I'm trying to say here. I think you want to be in a position where Lamar still has the appearance and the wherewithal, and you scheme it up in a way that he still has to be accounted for all the time. But it can be done in a way that you're not necessarily calling eight designed runs a game for him
Well, he
in the
can't be a
way that,
decoy forever. He's got to
yeah.
run the ball at some point, right?
Well, he's going to, and a lot of times that's going to be the second play, right? It's going to be the scramble, right? I think that's what you're going to see. Like, you go back to the season he had 2 years ago, he had 915 rushing yards, but go back and look how many of those were designed runs compared to 3 or 4 years earlier in the Greg
Yeah,
Roman offense, right?
sure.
So I think that's where we're talking. To me, if you ask me to just like, and this is almost being like fantasy football, like trying to project in a year where Lamar stays healthy and this team is mostly, winning games, winning the division, let's say, not saying going 15-2, but let's say 11-6, somewhere in that territory, 12-5. To me, it probably means Lamar's somewhere in the neighborhood of 700 to 800 rushing yards. Somewhere in that. That's where he was in 23 and 24 when he was.
Which would still be in the greatest in the history of the game for a
Of
quarterback.
course, it's still incredible, right? Maybe 700. Maybe that, somewhere in that neighborhood.
You still see
650,
him very
700,
much as a
750.
running quarter. Like that has to be
I
that
mean,
has to be a real serious part of
well,
the.
and
I'm not disagreeing with you, dude.
right.
They're paying him to be that because they're not paying him to be a drop back. They're paying for the result of all of his talents.
Yeah. Well, and let's face it. I mean, it's really tough to gauge because he got hurt in week four against Kansas City last year. But go look at his first three games of the season. Six carries for 70 yards against the Bills, two carries for 13 against Cleveland. Okay. So, Browns did a good job against him, right? And obviously that was a game that Lamar went nuts throwing touchdowns, as that day went on, had four touchdowns. And then even the third game of that, he had 35 rushing yards there. I mean, it's not as though he wasn't running at all. He had 48 rushing yards before he left the game against the Chiefs in week four. After that is when we saw that dissipate so much, right? Where he wasn't even, they weren't running more than one or two design runs all game, and maybe he was scrambling a couple times and that's it, because he wasn't at 100%. We know that. So I think even last year, it's not like it was this concerted effort that you weren't going to use Lamar's legs. I think it just kind of became, it was just out of necessity. I mean, their offense was worse for it, quite frankly. I mean, it's just the truth. We can think back to the middle of the season. I could pull up plays in some of those games where you'd see wide open green in front of Lamar, where he could have left the pocket and easily gotten yardage. And instead, he tries to force a throw in because I just don't know if he had the confidence in outrunning people at that point in time. I don't think that's who he is now, but I think that's who he was in an injury plague season. So I think, again, for Doyle, I think it's finding that sweet spot of, yes, utilizing his legs at times, but designing an offense where that threat continues to be, along with Derrick Henry, continues to be the centripetal force of this offense, right? And, again, he doesn't need to run for 1,200 yards like he did in his first full year in the NFL. I mean, I don't see a need for that unless they're in a position where Derrick Henry gets, heaven forbid, has a long-term injury and these other running backs aren't getting it done. And then you're just doing it out of necessity. And then under that scenario, you're holding your breath whether eight's going to make it through the season. So, I think, again, trying to lay out how this is all going to look, that's where I'm intrigued to see where Declan Doyle, how he feels about it. And frankly, I'm interested to see how Lamar's going to feel about it at this point in his career.
Week one's gonna be fun and a long. We got a lot of talking between now and then,
Oh,
but how this looks,
who knows what it's going to look like?
I'm excited thinking about it right this minute
It's
and it's
wide
6 weeks
open.
away to think like, let's play. I want to see it. I want to see it. But I'm also hoping the Orioles give us some reason to sort of hang in
Sure.
there, and I'm hoping that the texts that come out of Owings Mills aren't three starters or lost between now and when that moment happens. But the over under is at least 1.5, right? Like something bad, weird. It's just the way it is, right? But in a general sense, anybody associated with this should be hopeful about it, right? It's been constructed by Bisciotti down through DaCosta, through the veteran players, through the young players they drafted, through the Max Crosby debacle in the offseason, through the new coach, to the young coordinator, to the Anthony Weaver homecoming. Like, there's a lot going on here, you know?
Yeah, let me give you one more
It's
Lamar
even
nugget.
fun watching Harbaugh as a sideshow and with the Giants. Like, literally, like these other tentacles going on around the league. That's fun. The Pittsburgh thing, fun, right? Like,
Yeah, I mean
who knows, right?
Pittsburgh's in the same space as the Ravens. I mean, they've got a new head coach for the first time in
But
a really, really long
everybody, their
time.
fans think if they win 10 games, because
And
that's
that's the
what they
thing. I mean,
did, right?
they just don't have the same potential ceiling that the Ravens fancy themselves having, or that the rest of the observers fancy the Ravens having, at least.
Before you
But I
make your
want to.
closing point, I'm gonna let you do that. Remember when you and I believed in the Orioles in the offseason? That's
Sure.
all I'm saying. So,
We're going to see what happens,
I'm
right?
just saying.
Everyone loves their new head coach until they start playing games, and then right away, there's something to complain about. But speaking of the head coach, and this is my last, it's a Lamar nugget, I guess. I mean, I don't have many observations from the first day of practice. Lamar looked good. He threw to Zay Flowers. Whoop-de-doo, right?
Take 10 hours of phone calls in the first day of
But
practice.
here, this is something that I found to be interesting. From talking to some people in the organization, there is some optimism about how Lamar feels about the coaching staff right now. I definitely get that. And again, I'm not even, that's not meant to be an indictment on Harbaugh or Monken or anything like that. It's
I'll
just
take
they
it as
like the
one.
new guys. It's fine. But one thing that's interesting, and this was even brought up during Lamar's podium session, but I know this has actually been, someone else had brought this up to me recently. Jesse Minter is a defensive mastermind, or that's the perception anyway, right? He's a defensive coach. And by all accounts, so far, again, we're still in the honeymoon period, right? No one's lost a game, anything like that. But so far, he and Lamar, it sounds like they've hit it off pretty well. But one thing that's kind of been talked about is Lamar's got a head coach, and I believe he said this at the podium. Correct me if I'm wrong, or anyone who's out there, send me an email and say, you're wrong on this, Luke. But I'm pretty sure Lamar said he's never had a head coach who was a defensive-minded play caller, like called the defense. There's a school of thought here of Jesse Minter in the way that any head coach needs to be in lockstep with his franchise quarterback, right? No matter the scenario, you need that. It's a partnership. It's the two most important people that, guy on the field and guy on the sideline, two most important people. There is a school of thought of those two and Jesse Minter coming to meet with Lamar Jackson on, I'm not saying it's going to be every day, but to kind of give Lamar much more of a defensive-minded perspective about how he plays, about how the offense operates.
If you do
That,
that, I'm going to stop you, and here's
yeah, I
why,
think that's
right?
interesting in a way that, think about it. And you could say, well, the Ravens have had defensive coordinator. Well, a defensive coordinator who is responsible for everything with that in that defensive room over the course of the week and putting together the game plan and all that. You don't have the time to meet with the franchise quarterback. Jesse Minter being in the position he's in, which, yes, he's going to be much more defensive heavy in terms of his work over the course of the week. However, he is the head coach. Anthony Weaver is going to be the one that primarily puts together the game plan along with the assistant coaches. Minter will be involved in that. And then obviously the headset goes to Jesse Minter on game day, right? So there's a process to all of that. But part of Jesse Minter not being the full, true 100% defensive coordinator is on a Tuesday, he can meet with Lamar Jackson. Or Monday afternoon, or wherever, whenever they decide to do it. And he can give Lamar a different perspective that, frankly, John Harbaugh or Bobby Petrino at Louisville could not give him. And I think that's interesting. Now, I don't know if that means Lamar's going to have the best season of his career, right? I mean, Lamar, that's a high bar for Lamar Jackson to be able to do that in terms of the regular season. It's all about the Super Bowl for everyone on this team right now. But I just thought, you know, that's something that I hadn't necessarily given a lot of thought, but someone brought that up to me a couple days ago as this was starting to, and I thought that's kind of interesting if you really think about it, that, you know, in the same way that, you know, you think about like the baseball dynamic, a pitcher comes up and gives up a teammate that's a hitter. He happened to play with the guy that's going to be on the mound. He played with him in Milwaukee a few years earlier. And hey, watch out for this. And then that hitter goes up and hits a home run because of the tip that that guy's former teammate gave him or something. You know, it reminds me of that a little bit. It kind of gives Lamar potentially a different perspective as far as a head coach who knows defense so well and can say, hey, right here, you should have done this because the defense coordinator is thinking this, and that's how they attacked you. Here's how you countered that. I mean, it really. It's interesting. It's just another layer to this that we talked about starting in January. The idea that you bring in a coach that has an expertise, no offense to special teams. And again, I'm not trying to be disparaging to John Harbaugh here, but who has a heightened level of expertise on one side of the ball or the other, who is freed up to not have the full-blown coordinator responsibilities. That, you know, I think that's a wrinkle that you could see the Ravens, you know, it's not going to be something that's advertised, but I think it's something they can do behind the scenes that could end up being really interesting. And who knows? Something that Jesse Minter might tell him that, hey, look for this defense to do this in that situation because that's how I would play it. I mean, that could win them a game at some point. Who knows? I mean, I just think that's interesting. And I think in general, the competition over the course of the summer when Jesse Minter is the guy calling the defense in practice every day against Declan Doyle, not just Lamar, but Declan Doyle also as a first-time play caller. That's a really interesting chess match that is always there between coordinators. Again, I don't want to, they're not reinventing football, but it's a little bit of a different, it's a little different wrinkle than we're used to in these parts when you had more of the CEO model as your head coach over the last 18 years.
Luke's going to have observations like that from out in Owings Mills. We have plenty of observations for the MLB trade deadline this weekend. We are doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. I have my Raven scratch-offs here. We'll have these at Costas on Thursday. We'll have them at Coco's on the 26th of next month. Don't look for a Coco's Crab Cake next week. They're on vacation. So that's when you're going to want it the most. You better get there this weekend before they run out. The Phillies are getting here this weekend as well. My goodness, just a lot going on as football and baseball intersect, and the way the baseball team played on Wednesday afternoon, there feels like there's some life, some livelihood. Certainly gonna be livelihood in the city here with the Phillies in town, and lots of sound now available. Locker room sound at Baltimore Positive. Luke's out there doing that work, and we're just here talking about all sorts of things. He is Luke. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.